from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. For a whole lot of people in the 20th century, sitting at work at the office was just what you did. Then came the word, it's bad. Raises the risk of chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, even cancer. Sitting is the new smoking, some even say. And today, more and more people are getting up at work. Standing desks, treadmill desks, walk and talk meetings. And now, new recommendations for just how much we should be moving around in the office. It can take a little bit of a cultural revolution. This hour on Point, getting up, standing up, and moving at work. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Are you standing right now at your office, at your desk? How's that going? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Tempe, Arizona is Dr. James Levine, professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic. He co-directs Obesity Solutions, a program of the Mayo Clinic in partnership with Arizona State University. He's author of the book, Get Up, Why Your Chair is Killing You and What You Can Do About It. He invented a treadmill desk, but doesn't make money from its sales. Dr. James Jim Levine, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
We've been sitting at desks for a long time. It didn't seem so bad at the time. What's the problem?
I suppose in a way that perfectly illustrates the problem. It's insidious. We really are so used to sitting all the time that it's one of those things. It's almost like breathing. You don't even think about anymore. And the trouble is, what, a couple of centuries ago, no one used to sit all day long. And so quite, in essence, the human body isn't designed to sit all day. And this has crept up on us, and now we've got to do something about it.
You've been talking about this very loudly for years. Your chair is killing you. What are you seeing? How much change are you seeing? How widespread in the way people, what, work, act, stand, move in the office?
Tom, I've got to tell you, about 10 or 15 years ago, when we first started presenting the data that excess sitting was associated with obesity, we literally had our senior colleagues jumping up in auditoria with us, with our scientific colleagues, sort of screaming at us that this has got to be nonsense. And over the last 15 years, what we've actually seen is more and more and more evidence that not only is excess sitting associated with low calorie burn, but also a whole host of chronic diseases ranging from diabetes, hypertension, obesity, cardiovascular disease, just as you said, but also things like low mood, depression, a tendency towards bad back and low bone mineral density, and on top of that, increased risk of malignancies such as breast cancer.
You know, the thing that sort of wigs me out here is that, I mean, I'm very active, but I also have to do a lot of reading, a lot of research, a lot of background reading for this show. And I've always said, all right, I'll be at the gym. I'll be out for that walk. I'm a gym rat. I'm a big walker. I do the exercise. But everything I'm reading here says that's not okay. That's not enough. If you sit too much, exercise won't counteract it. Why not?
Tom, so first of all, I've never heard you describe yourself as a gym rat before.
Here we go. But, first thing.
We call that breaking news, right?
Yeah, right.
But no. But in seriousness, the first comment, not only to you, Tom, but also to the audience, is if you guys are going to the gym, that is brilliant. Please, please keep going. Make sure you love it, embrace it, and enjoy it. And make it, and that is absolutely marvelous. However, Tom, you are in the vast minority of Americans, in the sort of, if you like, the sort of the quarter of Americans who might ever go to a gym. Most individuals in the United States, most people across the world, do not exercise regularly. And so for them, of course, you know, being a gym rat, so to speak, is actually irrelevant. Now, for my patients, that, namely those individuals who are battling with obesity, you know, the gym has become even more irrelevant because they feel stigmatized and, you know, and often people are so busy and they can be expensive. And so for those individuals, excess sitting, just as you say, is associated with all of these, you know, really quite concerning health issues. Now, for those gym rats, who do love going to the gym those three times a week. You know, first we got to remember it takes half an hour to get there, and then not my problem, sitting in the car, probably. Exactly. Listening, hopefully, to the radio,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
But then, actually, after the gym, you've still got to redo one's hair. Actually, not my problem. And so the time you actually spend.
Yeah. But look, here's.
It doesn't even take me two seconds.
But this is what confused me. Okay. I had always thought. Well, sure. I'm reading for a few hours a day, but I go to the gym, so it will counterbalance that. But what I've been reading the last couple of days here, sitting down, I suppose, is that it doesn't. That's something about the sitting itself, that exercise, walking, running, whatever it is, won't counteract.
And you are exactly correct. I mean, one of my colleagues in the United Kingdom put it very well. She said, look, how can you expect something you do for, what, half an hour at the end of the day to offset all the harm for the other 15 hours? And that's exactly the point. So, you know, going to the gym is actually good for you. It gives you health benefit, no question. But that actually is a separate issue to excess sitting, and it doesn't offset the harm of sitting too much.
What are the most effective steps that people are taking in a workplace to counteract the sitting? Is it standing desk? Do you have to go all the way to the treadmill? You invented this treadmill desk. We're hearing about walk and talk meetings. What's a kind of regime or that's effective in actually confronting this?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the first concept is if you actually have a big issue, let's not call it a problem. Let's call it a challenge. If we have a big challenge to redesign work, tips and tricks are not going to be the solution. Right? Like anything big in our lives, you actually need a proper plan and a proper rollout, if you like. And that involves the leadership of one's company. That involves the individuals who are cleaning the offices after at the end of the day. And it involves each of us as individuals.
What does that mean? Does that mean you've got to knock down all the old equipment, take out the desks? you got to redesign, rebuild the office to accommodate this?
You see, what I'd say, Tom, is no. What we need to do is rethink. Because if you go into a company board and say, look, we need to sort of clear out all the desks, we need to completely redesign how work's going to occur. Mm-hmm. I mean, the board of management are going to say, you're not doing that in our offices, you know. You're not going to do that because you're going to impact productivity. No. The way to do this is to actually create this environment of movement. So right now, you and I are talking. I don't know if you're sitting, but I'm not. I'm up just pacing around inside this studio here in Tempe, Arizona. And in the same way that I've converted a sitting activity into an upwards and moving one, that is exactly how a meeting can be converted into a walk and talk meeting. There's nothing lost. No one breaks a sweat. But what you've done is convert a seated hour into a moving hour. And how many meetings do many of your listeners have each day? Similarly, when one answers the telephone, one can get into the habit of as soon as the phone rings, it sort of becomes a behavioral cue. You get up and start moving. One can also have the habit of gossip at lunchtime is critically important. We all know that. We all, you know, what's Jilly up to? What's Johnny up to? Whatever it may be, right? But why not do that having a walk and talk with
okay.
a friend?
Okay, I've been sitting. Yes, okay, I'm standing. I'm going to start fidgeting. But yesterday, we were at our regular noon staff meeting to talk about what's coming up today. And as soon as we start talking about how bad it is to sit down, everybody gets the urge to stand up. Soon, there's 10 people standing up at the meeting. And it just feels kind of weird, just organizationally. You know, what we do at a meeting is sit around a big table and hash things out. When everyone's standing up, it almost doesn't feel like a meeting anymore. It feels like we should play volleyball or something.
Tom, are you suggesting for a second that it sounded more fun?
Well, yeah, it was more fun. And I think everybody felt more energetic, but what about office dynamics? Do things stay focused? Does work get done when everybody's, you know, boogieing around?
This is actually the critical question of the whole thing, because yes, it's great to go to a company and say, look, your health numbers are going to get better and so on and so forth. But you've actually just touched on the critical thing. The data suggests that when you energize a company just in the way you're talking about, productivity and creativity actually improve. And where this has been measured in, if you like, number of loans processed per hour, whatever the widget may
okay.
be,
yeah.
that improves about 10 to 15% in the studies that have been conducted thus far. And so in a way, your team meeting picks up exactly on this. You spoke, what did you speak of? You said high energy. We yeah. kind of felt happier. We yeah. felt as though we should get a volleyball out.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're talking about.
But as soon as we were finished talking about this subject, we all reverted to habit and sat back down on our duffs. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that across the country, you've got lots of companies where everybody's standing around a table or just out in the lobby having standing meetings. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's what's happening.
Well, I tell you what's actually very interesting is as soon as you walk into the hot, the cool companies, the highly innovative companies, for example, about half the companies I've visited that are tech startups in San Francisco, literally half of those companies have these kind of workplaces. People are moving around during the day. They're throwing sort of foam balls at each other. You know, workers all of a sudden become fun. My goodness. Right? Most of us spend most of our waking hours at work. Forget activity and forget health. Why does that have to be a miserable experience? And the answer is it doesn't.
I am just guessing, nevertheless, that some great majority of people in office jobs, and we know very well that there's a lot of retail and everything, and never mind construction and all the rest, but mm-hmm. office jobs who, it must be an overwhelming majority, who go in and they sit down to work. It's just one continuous phrase and way of thinking. Most people still sit down, don't they?
Also, I suppose one needs to think about any cultural revolution, and there are so many examples. If I'd have told my grandpa, may he rest in peace, that one day I would not only be carrying the house phone in my pocket, but his entire record collection in my pocket, he would have thought I was completely insane. But of course, this is now normal.
Yeah.
And in exactly the same way that we have been conditioned, stop fidgeting, Jim. I can remember that like yesterday at school, right?
Yeah, and now it's the opposite. Fidget, Jim.
Yes, get up and move. You know, we have been conditioned to live in chairs, and that needs to change. That needs to fundamentally change in terms of how we are actually living our lives.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the end of sitting at work, or people calling for a bunch of that anyway. The warning that sitting, too much sitting, is bad for us, standing, moving, pretty good for us, and how to actually integrate that into a real office life. Here's Tori Johnson, businesswoman, talking with Good Morning America. Jim Levine has invented one of these treadmill desks. She uses one because it makes her feel better.
I got this because I think that it makes me focus better and it makes me feel better about myself.
And here's fourth grader Lola San Rafael in San Francisco with standing desks there for fourth grade students. She tells CBS she likes it.
To me, it's really fun and it makes me more focused.
Dr. James Levine joins us from Tempe, Arizona. He's author of Get Up While Your Chair is Killing You and What You Can Do About It. Jim, we've got a lot of people writing in here. What Diana Taft. Taft says, already have my stand-up workstation. When I sit, I use an exercise ball instead of a chair. We'll look at those. Office life isn't going to kill me, Taft writes. Diana says, I read Dr. Levine's book and now have a mini bike under my desk. It keeps me overweight instead of obese. In the USA, that's a good step. And here's awesome. Blue Jay says, hey, on point. I was home repairing an old quilt sitting on the couch. Now I'm standing at the bar table while I sew. So it's working there as well. At least the quilt will be made from a standing position, repaired standing. Jim Levine, stand by in Tempe. Alan Hedge joins us right now from Ithaca, New York, professor, director of Human Factors and Ergonomics Laboratory at Cornell University, program chair for the National Ergonomics Conference. Alan Hedge, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
You've been talking about an ideal ratio of sitting, standing, moving. What is it?
It's 28 and 2. So you should spend about 20 minutes sitting in a neutral posture, about 8 minutes standing in a neutral posture, and then about 2 minutes strolling and stretching. And if you repeat that cycle throughout the day, you're going to have got about 5 hours of sitting, which we think is okay for a workplace. Sitting has some real advantages over any other posture.
What is it with British guys and this subject? I didn't know that we were going across the pond. That's great.
We rock and roll.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you are stereotyping me.
No, all right. 20 minutes sitting, 8 minutes standing, 2 minutes strolling. Now, I have colleagues who stand all day. And I'm sure they do that because they think it's good for them. But now you're saying
that's not true.
What's the problem
Absolutely.
With that? Why not?
Well, so the fundamental problem is that we're energy systems. We want to conserve energy as much as possible. And when we sit down, that helps to conserve energy. It requires less muscle activity. It actually reduces the effect of gravity on the body. And it also stabilizes us. So if we're performing a fine motor task like sewing a quilt, you'll do that better sitting down than standing up. If you're typing on a keyboard or if you're mousing, you'll do that better sitting down than standing up. But there are other things like reading a document, talking on the phone, you know, thinking about new ideas that you'll do better if you're actually standing or moving.
Let's say I don't care about performance. I only care about my body. Does standing have actually deleterious effect on the body if I do it all day at a standing desk?
Absolutely it is. You know, 50 years ago, the issue was that people stood to work. They stood in factories. They stood on assembly lines.
Yep.
They stand in retail
still
stores.
Do.
They still do. And in all of those situations, we know from an ergonomic standpoint that standing increases problems with low back pain. Standing increases problems with circulation, carotid artery disease, varicose veins, increases problems with the feet. And the lower parts of your anatomy in terms of supporting the whole body. So we spend a lot of time trying to figure out how do we reduce those loads? How do we change what people wear footwear-wise? You can't stand all day in high-heeled shoes, for example. We use anti-fatigue mats and we let people sit down periodically to alleviate the problems of standing. So sitting all day is bad for you. Standing all day is bad for you. Walking all day is probably also going to be bad for you.
Ultimately.
And so the key is to actually mix it up.
Mix it up. Jim Levine, what do you make of that program? 20 minutes sitting, 8 minutes standing, 2 minutes strolling. Will you prescribe that, Dr. Jim?
I think it's absolutely fantastic. I mean, what we identify from going into real workplaces, we've worked in sort of several dozen at this point in time, are two things. Different workplaces necessitate different approaches to helping people to get up and move. And in some, Alan's suggestion is like magical, right? Can you imagine you're sort of looking out over cube land and all of a sudden people are getting up, doing some stretching, doing a bit of strolling, some rock and roll, of course, and then sort of sitting down and getting back up with their job. I think in some workplaces, that is just going to be phenomenal and great fun. Other workplaces don't quite allow that kind of regimentation to occur. And so in a way, sort of, you know, different, just like our clothes, if you like, different sizes fit different people. And also what's very interesting listening to Alan, I think it's also very important to note is that, again, we find this working with individual clients, that different people need and want different things, and different things work for different people. And I think this, as time moves on, we're going to start to be able to refine what we can offer different individuals.
All kinds of workplaces out there. Let's hear from our listeners. They are in them. Vanessa in Nashville, Tennessee. Vanessa, thanks for calling. What do you know?
Thanks, Tom. I work for a nonprofit, so obviously looking at the $2,000-$3,000 treadmill desk, that was not going to work for me. For under $200 and a little ingenuity, I was able to get a little glider for under my desk. I can pull it out and push it back in when I'm done. I put my laptop on a little stand. I do it for two times a day. And what I'm finding is that I come home with more energy. I mean, I used to sit down all day, come home exhausted. And it was just kind of this dystonic feeling of I sat all day, but I'm tired. And this way, I feel like I'm more energized. Yes, I do. My body temperature does rise. So if I have a cardigan, I take it off.
Yep.
But you're
just putting a little riser on top of your desk and lifting your keyboard up onto that. Is that right, Vanessa?
No, I'm not just standing. I have a little glider. under my desk.
A glider. What does that mean exactly? A glider.
It's kind of like the elliptical motion.
Oh.
But it's very small and compact.
I see.
I do the elliptical motion, and I can still type while I'm doing that. And then when I'm done, it sits neatly under my desk. I can still have clients in my office, and it not be, you know, what is that big thing on your desk? So it's been really helpful.
And how many minutes or hours a day would you do you regularly get up and do this motion while you stand?
Anytime I have a chance, maybe once or twice in a day, if I can get it in. What I've noticed is I oftentimes forget that I'm doing this motion, and I look down and I've done it for 40 minutes. If I just stand, I don't feel it. My legs get tired. It's not the same. Just standing for 40 minutes doesn't seem to give me that same rise in energy. But that gliding motion has really made me, refreshed me to keep on. I'm a mental health therapist, so sometimes it can get pretty stressful after, you know, several meetings with people.
So stand up and move, and it's better for you. Vanessa, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Jim Levine, I mean, you actually invented one of these treadmill desks. I had a friend who very much, he said, I want to do this, but I feel weird being the first one to have this in the office. I mean, the treadmill is kind of a big deal. Vanessa's got a little glider, she calls it. Treadmills can look pretty imposing. I mean, are people ready to, is there room? Are people ready to have that next to them? Or, you know, does the boss kind of lose his mojo if he puts that in his corner office and people see him bobbing around in there?
So the first comment, Tom, is that, you know, the treadmill desk has become the new BMW. Do you know what I mean? So when
are they $2,000 or $3,000? That sounds like a new BMW. That's a lot of dough.
It does, doesn't it? But the comment I'd like to make to Vanessa is that there were two key words, ingenuity and energy, right?
Yep.
So the first comment I'd make is what Vanessa is doing is exactly what we try and impart to clients we work with individually. This idea of coming up with ingenious solutions that work for you, in Vanessa's case, work for her. And Vanessa, I've got to tell you, if you're still there, I think what you're doing is total genius. The other thing that you report, which is exactly what the data suggest, is that it's the opposite to what you might expect, is if you're sort of getting more energized at work, moving around, doing the meetings, doing the gliding, whatever it may be, you may be worried that you're going to go home exhausted, sort of pooped out. Mm. And actually what we discover is just kind of what you're saying is people go home more energized, not less. And the data support that. In fact, the more energized you are at home, the more energized you'll be at work. The more energized you get at work, the more energized you'll be at home. And so, you know, what a lovely, lovely story. And thank you, Vanessa, for that. I'm going to try a glider.
Listeners, we've got a lot of expertise on tap for you here. I want to bring in just a little more. Alan Hedge, Jim Levine, standby. Marcus Baer joins us now from St. Louis, Associate Professor of Organizational Behavior at Washington University in St. Louis. He looks at the social dynamics of workplaces where people are standing, moving. Marcus Baer, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, thanks for having me.
Do you find universal acceptance of this in the workplace, or does it freak some colleagues out when their, you know, neighboring desk has suddenly got someone standing at it looking down on their terrain?
I try this myself. Oftentimes in meetings, I'm one of the individuals standing up, and it does make people uncomfortable. I think it would be nice if it's a norm that is shared. When I teach this in my courses, in fact, I ask students to get up when they are conducting small meetings, short-term meetings, mm-hmm. and they do sit down right afterwards again. So it's hard to instill that norm in people that it's good to stand up all the time or most of the time.
What does it take to get over that hump for an individual or for an entire workplace culture and make standing and moving normative?
I don't quite know yet. I do think that desks help. In fact, reducing the length of meetings oftentimes is helpful because I think people would be not inclined to stand up if they knew that the meeting is going to last an hour to two. So the research that we have done is with meetings that are shorter in duration. And we were trying to understand if there are really performance benefits. We talked a lot about the health benefits. We wanted to understand whether or not people are actually more productive and more creative. And we found that if a team meeting is a conductor standing up, people are actually more excited. That's what you talked about earlier, right? You said it felt like you want to pick up a volleyball. In fact, we had Wilson in the room, the volleyball from the movie. and people are more likely to be engaged, and as a result, they pay more attention to each other, and they do come up with a better product.
More productive, more creative, that sounds like a way to sell it to the boss.
I would think so, and that is my shtick as well. That's exactly right. So if you have a meeting for about, like, we tested it in meetings that lasted half an hour to 45 minutes. It turns out that when people are standing up, they think they're not only more aroused, excited, right, but they also think about themselves differently, they're less territorial. Because when you sit, you define a space, right? You think, this is mine. And when you stand up, you're less likely to do that, and that kind of translates into how we think about our ideas and how we talk to each other.
Maybe we're a little more all in this together when we're standing. Gary in Beloit, Ohio. Gary, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I sell office furniture and design offices for new and remodeled construction.
Is this stuff moving? Is it becoming common, Gary, or not?
Well, that was my question. Now, first of all, we study ergonomics with respect to seating, keyboard height, carpal tunnel syndrome, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But last week I was introduced to an adjustable table desk, which can go from the standard desk height to countertop height so that the person can stand. And I understand there are health benefits with that. But my question is, are there certain industries that are readily accepting these types of products, you know, in a cost versus benefit, cost versus productivity?
Are you looking for your best sales targets, Gary?
Well, yes, I am. And frankly, because it's a new product, I don't have any data on it. So it's a new thing for me.
I promise to put that to my guests. What about you? When you go out to sell this, are bosses receptive, or they're like, I don't know if I want people standing and jumping around?
Well, again, it's a new product for me, so I haven't had any time in the field with it yet. The table sells for under $900.
Okay.
And it has a 12-year warranty on the motor. It's very smooth and quiet.
So it motors up and down at the press of a button to preset heights or something like that?
Yes.
Let us pick it up. Gary, I'm glad for your call. I wish you good luck, Marcus Baer. Are there industries or regions where this has got the best or worst adoption?
Well,
can I come in and answer that, Tom?
Is that Alan?
It's Alan.
Yes,
yes, it is. Yeah. So let's look back. The first sit-stand workstation was patented in 1899. So this isn't a new idea, right?
I guess not.
Sit-stand workstations were used in and have been and still are used in industry, in industrial assembly. They've been there since the 1950s.
Yeah.
Treadmill workstations, the first one was tested in 1989, and the testing was done to see whether it could reduce the effects on working at a computer, reduce the stress effects, and it was patented in 1993. So these are not new ideas. We studied electric height-adjustable tables in a company called Intel in 2002-2003.
It's all about adoption rates, isn't it?
It's been around a long time.
Yeah, adoption is a different question.
Well, no, the problem isn't the technology. The problem, I mean, not the support technology. The problem is the technology you work with. Until recently, we've been fixed in space by the computer technology. Mm-hmm. It's not been small enough. It's not been portable enough. If you go back to before you had your mobile phone, there was no way you could walk around and text and surf the web and do emails. Mm-hmm. Now that technology has freed us up, it means that we need to rethink workplaces. Workplaces traditionally were designed and defined by space, by fixing people in a space, in a building. Now what we're trying to do is to get organizations to realize that it's the whole workplace that counts. You don't have to do everything at one location. You don't have to have every desk go from sitting to standing. You can have some sitting areas. You can have some standing areas. You can have some areas that where you have sit-stand adjustment. And because you have mobile technology, people can move between the areas. This is... So architects and designers have begun incorporating this into buildings. We have one building that's just come on stream this year, and that simple idea of moving people around on average means that those people take an extra 1,600 steps a day.
You may get a crick in your neck from all that smartphone use or cramp in your thumbs.
Well, no, you're not necessarily using a phone.
Okay.
You're moving between technologies. So, you know, we have to rethink the whole work process.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the end of just sitting at work. The warning that too much sitting, very bad for us. Standing, moving have to be worked in there. We're looking at how to actually integrate that into a real working life, very often a real office life. Marcus Baer is with us from Washington University in St. Louis, Alan Hedge from Cornell in the ergonomics laboratory there, Jim Levine, Dr. James Levine with us from the Mayo Clinic and the Obesity Solutions Program with Mayo and Arizona State. He's author of Get Up, Why Your Chair is Killing You and What You Can Do About It. Lots of response online here. Daniela says, absolutely standing right now. I work for a large international company that supports standing desks, easily slide to sitting as well to match your needs through the day. It took a little while to get used to, but now sitting all day is uncomfortable. Hill writes to us, when he first got in the workforce in an office with the factory a couple hundred feet from Hill, the boss insisted I leave my chair and observe what we were producing, talk to workers, make sure things were going okay. Today, that factory is across an ocean. I consider my butt and video conference with workers, PowerPoint presentations, substitute for actually looking at things. Management says it's cheaper. Long run, who knows about the health? Sometimes technology pushes us in the wrong direction. DT says, what about sitting in elementary, middle, high school? Maybe getting kids up and moving at an earlier age would stave off some of the obesity and metabolic issues so prevalent in U.S. kids. Let us look at that. Let me hold that thought. Sue in Buffalo, New York. Sue, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm so excited we are discussing this today because I work for a call center and I'm going to send this conversation to corporate.
Why do they need it, Sue? What's the deal? What's up?
Well, they'll know what they're doing right because my company mandates that we take a 10-minute break every 50 minutes and get up and walk around.
Okay.
And my company has one of those standing desks that electrically go down to sitting and electrically go up to standing.
Does everybody have one, or do you have to be the
one? There's one in the office.
One out of how many?
Yeah. Well, there's probably 12 desks.
Okay.
So
you take turns, or who gets it then, Sue?
Well, you know what's really interesting is that not everybody uses it,
mm-hmm.
which is fascinating. That's why this conversation is so important. I've been with this company 8 years, and I can tell physically how I've deteriorated, but the one thing that I heard that made me so excited, made me call, is I do what you guys said to do. When I answer the phone,
okay.
I stand up and give my greeting. And what I don't think the company or my fellow employees realize is that it gives me a boost of energy and it elevates my mood so that I'm more pleasant on the phone and I actually get more customer compliments, and it's not that I'm doing anything more amazing than my fellow coworkers.
So,
I just think I have a different mindset because of the standing.
Taking calls in a call center, and when they come in, you stand to take them. Do your fellow workers look at you like, hey, what's going on, Sue? Why are you towering over me now, or they're cool with it?
Well, actually, we're in cubicles, so I sometimes even dance in my cubicle, and nobody will see me. But it really... I think it all lends to the attitude and what you bring to your call based on where you're at personally and physically. So I do think, I also purchased for like $25 an under-the-desk peddler. So I actually paddle between phone calls like I'm riding a bike.
So you've got what it takes. And the image of you dancing in your cubicle, I'm going to hang on to that one. I'm going to roll with that one. That's just awesome. I appreciate your call. Keep on standing. I don't know. Alan, let me come to you with this. How much is enough? How much equipment do you need? How important is it to have that standing desk or the one that rises up and down? People are clearly sort of, making up their own solutions to this. Is that effective?
Well, Chilt, the first thing to remember is that moving is free. So if you want to see whether standing improves your performance, just try standing up. And as Jim said, and I do this as well, standing and as our caller just said, standing and talking on the phone is a great way of actually answering the phone and getting some movement there. You know, if you want to dance in your cubicle, it's free to do that. So that's the first thing. You've got to think about what can you do to increase movement. And the second thing is, well, what kind of technology are you working with, right? If you're working with, a huge clunky computer screen, and then it's going to take a lot to actually move that up and down. So you have to think about, are there simpler solutions? We have a ton of products out there now that can accommodate sit-to-stand working. But what we found with sit-to-stand working is that if all you do is stand up periodically, pretty soon, if you stand for too long, you start leaning, it puts you in a poor posture, and you can actually end up with some worse problems than if you didn't do that at all. So that's why we try and limit the amount of standing and encourage people to think about moving as well, building that movement in.
How many hours a day of standing do you recommend? How many hours a day?
Well, pretty well all the literature suggests. Now, two things to separate here. Standing in the day and standing at work, right?
Okay,
because your exposure to gravity is throughout the day. Mm-hmm. About 2 hours a day, 2 to 4 hours a day seems to be the sort of the reasonable goal to
at work
to go
or
for.
Total?
At work. Okay. 2 hours at work is the goal that we go for.
Okay.
Some people say, well, maybe going up to 4 hours, but it depends on the work you're doing. If you're using, if you're making phone calls, that's fine. But if you're doing, say, computer-aided design, you're going to do that much better if you can actually sit down. If it's a precision task, mm-hmm. then the act of sitting stabilizes your body so much better. You know, when you stand up, pretty soon you start swaying, you start leaning, you start moving.
I'm swaying already.
Because it's, you're swaying already. But one of the hardest things to do, and Jim said this early on, I used to get these comments as well, stop fidgeting. One of the hardest things you can do is stand still, right?
But you're not saying stand still, right? Movement
no,
is
we're
good.
Not. No, but that's what people think. They think, because a computer actually puts you in a position where you are still. You know, we've looked at this with people sitting on chairs that allow for dynamic movement. We find as soon as they start typing and mousing, they stop moving. Right? So that task itself stabilizes your body.
Jim Levine,
so we have to rethink how we're doing.
Yeah, Jim, if I get that treadmill desk in there, and now I'm only supposed to stand for 2, 3, 4 max hours at work, I'm supposed to sit down. So now what am I doing? Dragging my chair up on the treadmill? Pretty soon I'm in a precarious circumstance.
Just to reiterate, that really the what we're talking about here is integrating movement into your workday, an additional, 2 to 4 hours
exactly.
a day are currently the recommendations.
But a treadmill desk is a piece of infrastructure. My desk is in front of it. How do I, once I've got it, what options do I have? Or does my desk have to spin around and slide down?
I have all sorts of images in my head right now.
Yeah.
But actually, Tom, the way they work is they actually do have that electrical button and they can lower down. And so you sort of have your little treadmill thing on mm-hmm. the left and you have your chair on the right. And so you can intersperse sitting to do your sort of, writing your poetry. And then you can sort of take your phone calls and do your program upstanding whilst walking. And so those they're actually designed to enable you to do precisely both of those things. And some of the data that we've gathered from companies who've actually deployed this is absolutely fascinating. Is you can actually give somebody a treadmill desk and they'll choose not to use it. They'll lower it down, put their chair in the seating position and actually choose not to use it. Because for that individual, it doesn't sort of push the buttons necessary to make them happier or more productive. Other individuals, I had one chap called me. So I don't know how he got my home number, but he called me at 5:30 in the morning to say, Dr. Levine, yesterday I walked a half marathon at work.
Yeah.
Right. And so you get a sense of that variance.
That's a lot of miles. That's a lot of treadmill.
is pretty impressive stuff.
I've got very fit and determined colleagues who have, you know, everyone's jerry-rigging their solution to this, right? So we've got fixed computer screens, and they're putting little trays on top of their desks.
Correct.
Their keyboard on top of the tray, then standing and working at that. Now maybe you get weary of that. You sit down, and suddenly they're typing with their hands almost above their eyeballs up on those trays. Is that good?
But Tom, what actually that tells you is something actually very, very interesting. The information is out. People recognize that this excess sitting just is no good, and people are feeling it. And what this is telling you is there is a yearning. There is a yearning for something different. There is a yearning to be able to work in offices that give you the opportunity to get up and move throughout the day, but don't chain you down in front of that computer screen, behind the desk on a chair. And that's really what the revolution is going to bring. As you're listening to the people who are calling into the show, as you say, they're jerry-rigging, which tells you that people are personally and emotionally invested in finding a solution to being stuck in their chairs.
But it looks like it could give them upside down carpal tunnel or something. I mean, typing above your shoulders, can that be good?
I don't know. I feel a whole YouTube channel coming out on sort of, you know, bizarre things that happened to me today at work. Yeah. One other thing, Tom, you did mention is the impact on children. Mm-hmm. If I may very politely please bring this up.
Yes.
Yeah, in school. So we've worked with kids at the age of four. We've worked with middle school children, and we've actually worked with high school children. So we've worked across those age spans. And there are now multiple studies conducted in children which suggest that not only do children love to move if you give them the opportunity, in fact, they'll double their daily activity levels if you allow them to move whilst learning, but also their learning scores, their test scores improve by about 11% approximately compared to other kids. And so not only do you're seeing the same pattern, not only do adults work better and perhaps they're happier, they've got a bit more zest, energy, yeah, they're more creative and more productive, but children take to this even more than adults.
What about teachers? Are they freak out about classroom order? I mean, sit down has been the command in classrooms for forever.
That's a terrific question. And this is an important point that we haven't touched on yet. This is equally true for adults. The answer to that question is the teachers who sort of come to scientific groups like the ones you're talking to today and many, many other amazing researchers out there are those teachers who are internally motivated to see change in their classroom for the sake of the children they're educating. So you're seeing a massive bias in these incredible teachers who want their kids to move more during the school day because they know what sitting is kind of doing to their pupils. And similarly, the companies that are taking this on are internally motivated to enable their workforce to become more productive, more active, and healthier. And so this is one of the big issues is, no, we're not seeing any problems with teachers calling me up complaining that the children are unruly. In fact, the opposite. Children appear to be much better behaved if you allow them to move more during the class. However, that doesn't mean that this will be the case with all classes because that has yet to happen.
Gail in East Granby, Connecticut. Gail, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom and James. So my comment is about these call-in centers. I happened to have a tour recently for some work I was doing, and the people redesigning it, I commented, boy, there's enough room here. You could put in a workout room. And they said, no, they want people fat and happy. They want the ice cream machine. They want the soda machine. And
oh, no.
I can tell you that in the first 2 seconds of being in this space, you couldn't help but notice everyone was obese. Oh. So there's something going on in corporate America that's very hush-hush. And I'm wondering if you can permeate that.
I don't know if I want to permeate it, but I'll definitely pick it up, and I appreciate your calling with it. Gail, Marcus Baer, companies who deliberately want their workers fed and happy in the call center so they, I don't know, don't run away or calm down and work. How do you identify a workplace that's going to be open to this, a workplace that's going to be closed? What makes the difference? How do you change it?
Well, I think it's guided by a fundamentally wrong belief about what makes people happy, right? Our data is pretty clear that people who are moving about are going to be more happy, they're more aroused, and typically that arousal translates into better performance, as I said before. So I don't think people know really kind of like the damage that they're doing. And I imagine that a short-term high from consuming a lot of ice cream, we probably all had that experience.
Yeah.
But in the long-term implications of that are going to be pretty detrimental, of course, not only health-wise, but also for the productivity of workers.
Fat and happy, maybe not the way to go. Maybe not so happy pretty quickly. Chris in Nashville, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I was calling because you had said that it was kind of like you guys were going to start to play volleyball while you were standing up.
When the whole meeting got up, it was like time to do something.
Yeah, when I was in the Navy, we were big fans of standing up, not because it was healthy, but because it kept people awake. And so when I got out, I saw that people were falling asleep and stuff. So what I recommended to my boss and what we started doing was that we actually have a ring of podiums instead of a conference table. So everybody's standing up.
It's like the United Nations or some intergalactic meeting of superheroes.
Right. Yeah, that's basically my job. We're superheroes.
How does that work? That sounds a little freaky.
Well, it's the same as being at a conference table
yeah.
since everybody's standing up.
Yeah.
So it works out pretty well.
And the company adopted it, and you now speak to each other from podia?
Yeah. Well, we don't have meetings all that often.
Yeah.
When we do, we try to do that. That way it keeps people awake.
And do you see the difference, Chris? Are people more attuned, more attentive?
I think so. Yeah, we used to definitely have quite a few dozers during most meetings. So
and now they're up at a podium.
To get rid of that.
I love it. Let me get one more. Good luck with their Mark on I-95 southbound in South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air. Our time is short.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I sit all day long, 7 days a week.
Why? Are you lazy? Oh, you're driving a truck. Okay.
I'm driving a truck, yeah. You know, I'm an over-the-road guy, so, 11 to 14 hours a day behind the wheel.
Body's going to pay a price, and you must feel it. I don't know what your options are. Alan Hedge, very quickly, for our truck driver, what can he do?
Okay, take more frequent breaks. Make sure that you have a really good seat. If you don't, there are lots of products that can put you in a better posture. And then think about how you might actually build more movement into that driving process itself. Work's been done looking at truck and bus drivers trying to increase the amount of activity they engage in so that you don't suffer the problems of oversitting.
Mark, we see the challenge there at the wheel, but maybe even there we can work a little more movement in. Alan Hedge at the Ergonomics Lab at Cornell University, it's been so great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Dr. James Levine of Mayo Clinic and the Obesity Solutions Program there and at Arizona State with us today from Tempe, Arizona. Thanks, Jim.
My pleasure.
And Marcus Baer at Washington University in St. Louis. Marcus, thanks a lot for your insights today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Keep moving. Keep standing. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.